This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Now, we've got in the studio our first guest. So, now, Jono, who have we got?
We have the lovely Peter Hanrahan, who's the director of the Sentient Theatre production of A Room for One's Own. It's a play by Virginia Woolf, I believe. And it's on at 45 downstairs. Welcome, Peter. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for coming in. We like to sort of get to know our guests and get a little bit of history about where they started in the arts and how you got to be where you are today. So give us a little bit of background of, you know, your life in the arts.
Thank you. I'll do it in point form because it's been a long time.
Long story.
Hold on. You're only 19, aren't you?
Yeah. I think that's my shoe size, buddy. Anyway, I like a lot of creatives in the industry, in the arts, in most disciplines really, when you get to the point where you're a composer or a director, a writer, all of those things, you may have actually started as a player. So I started as an actor in my
youth.
Which
we find that a lot, yeah,
yes.
With directors, you know, like they come through and realise they're not a great actor, but they're a great director.
I think I'm a great actor. Oh, what are you trying to say?
Or they just get very bossy and they want to be directing.
I think that's
around.
What it is. Yeah, it's about control. It's simple. It's kind of going through different projects as an actor, found myself frustrated because I wanted to rule the world.
Right. And was it when you were a little kid or was it later?
No, this is all I've ever done, you know.
Right.
I've done my other kind of, you know, pay the rent jobs. But I've had no aspiration outside of being an artist.
Fantastic.
in the theatre.
Did
yes.
you study art? Acting, I should say.
Yes, I did. I did 3.5 years with Lecoq, Master Jacques Lecoq had a school in France.
Yeah, whoa, excuse me.
So, it wasn't Jacques Lecoq, his name was Richard Hayes Marshall.
Yeah.
He's in Sydney now.
Yeah.
I very happily stumbled across him in my late teens and worked with him tirelessly, actually, for the next 3.5 years. Changed my life, that information.
Wow.
And set me on a path of all of a sudden I had a vocabulary, a physical, because it's very physical theatre.
Yep.
And psychology of humanity. And it set me on the path to be able to educate myself, if you like, through language and text from there. I was a stilt walker. Studied a bit of circus back in the day, way before Nika and
yeah.
all the glory that's happening at the moment in the arts. But then I got to a point where I realised that story and language and text were really doing it for me, and wanted to create a bigger picture, if you
right.
like, not just my own individual picture as an actor, but as a director, to create the whole world
yep.
of that idea.
And when did it start, directing?
I reckon I can safely say 1993. I was offered, because I was stage managing a little bit at the time,
oh, okay.
which I was very happy to do.
Yep. Well, again, a good bossy role.
Totally. they called me the SS officer. I'm not quite sure if that was super stage manager. I don't know.
Sure it was.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I was asked to direct Charlotte's Web at the Collingwood Children's Farm.
Oh, gorgeous.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so I put my skills to the test to see if I could, you know, kind of get that right. And I did.
And were you doing it within the farm?
Yeah, in the barn.
Perfect. Wow.
I tell you what, it was like $300,000 worth of set for nothing.
Because
all of the kids and the parents would come in, sit on hay bales,
yep.
In the farm,
and
the chickens and the dogs were just
already
walking
there.
Through, and all of our characters with the rat and the spider,
yeah.
and all that kind of stuff. We're just a part of the, you know, ecology, if you like.
Yeah, and I bet you a lot of funny things happen with the animals and the kids.
Yeah, totally. I think the one that most people like to recall, it is 1993, it's a while ago, is I'm not really great with beasties. I like my cat, but I'm not really... I like horses on the other side of fences and, you know, I like cows when I'm driving past them. I love animals very much, but I just...
From a distance.
Yeah, and I appreciate them and respect them very much. But there was a rooster actually walked in while we were rehearsing, and I was just in... I was too busy to be dealing with the rooster who was trying to talk to me or something, and so I actually tried to chase him out, but he attacked me, and so I ran out of the rehearsal room, out of the barn, and there was this beautiful young child actually who came and settled this rooster down and kind of like, you know,
oh, cool,
just guided him out of the, and it was humiliating.
Rooster Whisperer came to the rescue.
Yeah, indeed, I was.
And you've continued on correcting since.
Yes, it was very successful, and I've had some beautiful peers who then started to offer work. La Mama has been a backbone. Yep.
Well, they're involved in this, aren't they, as well?
Yes, they are still, and I've come back to them later in my career now. I find the community of La Mama, the camaraderie, the feminine, if you like, of the way that the sensibility of doing art business, because art business can be a little bit cutthroat.
Yep.
And I'm over that totally, and I want to go back to a beautiful community who is supportive, and Liz Jones and Caitlin Dullard and the family at La Mama have all just incredibly supportive of me.
Tell us about the sub company that's putting this on.
Sentient Theatre.
Yep. What is that?
Okay. Well, it's kind of one of those things with Sentient. The name itself kind of speaks my politics.
Mm. What does it mean for those that don't know?
Sentient means awake. It means conscious.
Yep.
It's used a lot with vegan campaigning and all of that kind of thing. And bless them, so they should, that, you know, animals are also sentient beings as we are, and are feeling and conscious and learning. But it's down to the origin of the word, which is awake and conscious, which I like to... It's almost like a mantra for me that I actually... when I write the word, I'm awake to the work that I do,
mm-hmm.
The reason I do my work. Why do I do it? And after all of this time, 35-year career, why am I still doing it? And why go back to La Mama? Why not go into the mainstream? Go to the back to the source of why I started being an artist in the first place.
Yeah, and tell me, this has been a bit of a long journey for you. This actual theatre piece, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. It has. It kind of started when I was about 27 when I discovered it. I think that your listeners will probably be guessing that I'm nowhere near that. I'm not 19.
No one believes anything I say on this.
No,
show
okay,
anyway.
Right. So I'm in good company then. When I was 27 years old, I discovered this novelette written by probably, I think, one of the 20th century's greatest literary geniuses, Virginia Woolf, and couldn't believe that somebody had been able to articulate so beautifully and so profoundly and so and joyously and charmingly what had been going on in my head. And the way that the disparity of being a woman walking the planet and what goes wrong for us just by the structure of culture and the frustration with that. The frustration with domestic violence, you know, actually, that actually happens. Those kinds of things. Mm. Like, I can't believe it sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't want to become... skeptical, and I don't want to become bitter, and I want to be optimistic about the future of humanity, and the sentient to be awake. I want that we do survive through another millennia.
So what's this piece called?
It's called A Room of One's Own by Virginia Woolf.
Yep.
Her name is in the title because it is she that wrote it. I am the adapter. So in contemporary theatre, the dramaturg is fundamentally like a script editor. I have crafted I've sculpted, if you like, language, her language, and kept as true to it as possible to condense it down into an hour on the stage. The novelette itself is only 118 pages. She wrote it in 1928. It was published in 1929. But it came from a series of lectures that she delivered at Girton and Newham Colleges in Oxford and Cambridge. Mm-hmm. And when you consider that Cambridge has been going for hundreds of years, these particular universities were the only female universities in Cambridge and Oxford. That's it. And they'd only been around for a very short time. Very short time. So it's a Room of One's Own by Virginia Woolf is a really nice way to share a new idea, because every generation of women and men are learning about the disparity, the gender disparity in economics, in the home, all the way through politics, community, private life, that when you actually don't really know the information, and we're being bombarded in social media all the time with what we should be thinking about this, is how do we think, and when we're dealing with our daughters and our sons, how do we have that conversation with them so they're not going off on the wrong tangent? Mm.
And of course they don't want to listen.
Right.
Yeah, and I actually had a brief conversation. Well, it wasn't, but I'll briefly mention that myself and another dear friend, we were talking this morning, and it was about a father of this child and something that's happened. I said, but we can't fully understand because we're not a parent, and it's true. You know, we have an understanding of it, but not being a parent, you often don't have that same sort of feeling, do you?
Sure. I'm very lucky to be a parent, but I'm also the parent of a son. So how do I not shut him down because I'm angry about the patriarchy? Mm. How do I nurture my child to believe in himself and his potential when he is a part of the masculine?
Mm. How old is he?
He's 25 years old and he's gorgeous.
Well, of course he is. You're a mum.
I'm not joking. And I've got a few friends out there who are listening who's just going, yep, she's right.
Yeah. And how... No, that's a story for another time. I was going to ask you about him more. All right, so how many people... how many people are in this play?
There's four people. So what I've done is I've actually taken this lecture that she's given... And I could have done it as a monologue, but what I've decided to do is actually split it up into four personas, three women, one man. So I actually have a man on stage talking about feminism, if you like, or the root of it. Mm. And his name is Jackson Trickett. He's a wonderful actor, but he's also been a learning curve for me in the rehearsal room, which is understanding what the patriarchy is doing to men as well. This is a beautiful way to start the idea, the conversation. If you've got someone in your family who's starting to kind of understand the disparity, this is a really nice way. It's gentle, it's caring, it's quite charming, it's got quite humorous as well. But it's also that there's a masculine in there that Virginia Woolf talks about herself, which she talks about the porous mind, the mind that is most conducive to making art, and that is one that is not laboured by the circumstances of one's society.
What's your thoughts on a woman like Virginia Woolf, who, you know, her name is so famous?
Yeah.
You know, like back then, she was way back then, and you know, like a powerhouse woman back then.
Mm.
You know, isn't it wonderful that there have been some really strong, powerful women who have really stamped their authority on society?
Yes, and yes, and most of them are coming up through the 20th century. I play this little game sometimes, which is I ask people to name three famous male painters before the turn of the 20th century.
Oh, well, yes.
And they do, rapid fire.
Yep. Paintings, and then, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Painters. Well, it's arts, yep. Yeah. And then I ask them to do the same for women, and there's not a one.
Mm.
And so it's about the history of women. Mm. It's about tradition and the fact that we don't really actually have one.
Mm.
That women now, like the sublime Penny Wong, for example, is blazing a trail for us in the world. You can't undo that work, you know. And so it will be the generations that come that will have mentors, that will have women that we can look back to and say, oh, okay, it's not a masculine birthright. We can do this.
Mm.
We can do this. And that's what the Wolf is about also. It's about how did we get here? How did we get here and where do we go from here?
Mm.
Why are we angry about it? What are we angry about, actually? And how, and perhaps we can think about what comes after anger as well.
Jono, where's it on at and when's it running?
It's on 45 Downstairs, which is in the city, I believe.
Yeah, Flinders Lane.
Yeah, and the 17th to the 28th of July.
Yes.
So it's very soon.
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Of course
yeah,
you are.
No, we had a gorgeous rehearsal yesterday. I'm so happy where we are.
Fantastic. And what's it called again?
A Room of One's Own by Virginia Woolf.
Brilliant. And, of course, it's 45 Downstairs, one of our favourite venues here in Melbourne and on this show.
Yeah.
You just go to their website and book tickets there.
That'd be lovely.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks so much for coming in.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Petey. You're on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.